Blog Talk Radio.
It is Rich Wilson. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Live. We're here every Sunday evening talking the game of baseball, talking the game of fantasy baseball, talking whatever the heck we want to talk about. And as we roll into the month of June, for me, it's starting to heat up from a prospect standpoint as we've got the minor league draft coming up here a week from Monday. So it is big time exciting. Very excited about all that is going to be presented, and it's a really strong draft this year. I am writing up notes and talking with people who have seen these guys. Candidly, I've only seen a handful of people of these players. I have seen Hunter Green, and wow, see, I think Hunter Green should be a bat, not an arm. I mean, I saw him hit something, it must have been 450 feet. I mean, just a massive bomb. Really, really athletic kid. So I did get a chance to see him, a couple other college pitchers as well, but not my area. I can't do everything, so I'm off watching minor league games. I saw four minor league games this week. Got a chance to see Gleyber Torres, by the way. Didn't look so great. One of his debuts with in AAA, but man, that guy's got just all kinds of talent. But lots of stuff going on in the prospect world. We came up with our May pop-ups article this week. I hope you guys enjoyed that. 12 guys, 6 pitchers, 6 bats that I had seen. I think I'd seen 11 out of the 12 of those guys personally this year. Wanted to put Bo Bichette in there as a guy that just didn't make the list, but there's a lot of guys who are having really, really big years. But we're here on Sunday evening. We're talking primarily today's game, redraft leagues, touch on dynasty leagues, but we're going to be talking about primarily Major League Baseball players. Then we're going to talk about some kids who are about ready to come up. By the way, we are in the window now for to get over the Super 2 status. Everybody knows it's the top 20% of the players that come out every year. Those that are in the top 20% of those players will get to become free agents, only 3 years of arbitration, so as opposed to 4 years of arbitration. So that's why they don't want to be a Super 2 player. So if you're in that 80%, then you get an extra year of arbitration, which means you'll save a little bit of money. So they have a tendency to promote their middle relievers and, you know, et cetera, guys that probably are never going to cost a lot of money even after 3 years of arbitration, or maybe they just blow out their arm, as opposed to the Ahmed Rosarios and other types of players. But, you know, you do have some exceptions. Obviously, Cody Bellinger is going to be a three and four player. So it'll be 3 years of team control at a, you know, minimum salary, and then 4 years of arbitration. But hey, that's the way it goes. But the Mets will have 4 years of arbitration or of team control at the minimum, 3 years of arbitration, for instance, with Ahmed Rosario. So we're right in that window now. Most teams want to wait till about the 15th of June, which is, you know, in a week and a half. But that I think it's they don't even know exactly because it's all based on how many players get promoted. But it's at about 130 to 135 days. And we just passed that mark, so teams feel pretty confident. But most of the teams will keep their guys down another week or so. But we are seeing players coming up, and it's going to be exciting. So we'll be talking about those this evening as well. Without further ado, let me bring on my partner in crime here, the great Tim McLeod. Tim, how are you?
I'm good, Rich. And yourself?
I'm doing quite well, Timmy. It's a beautiful. It was a beautiful weekend here in the Northeast, at least yesterday, and now I go off to Las Vegas. Going to go lose some money at the tables for the next couple of days.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like a lot more fun than I had last week, Rich. I learned the reason why they call them stress tests. Okay.
Was it? It was tough, wasn't it? Tougher than you think, man. Getting that heart rate up is pretty brutal.
Yeah, it was the best minute and 22 seconds of my life, Rich.
But Timmy, I mean, you texted me. I appreciate that so much. Timmy and I were in contact all week, and you know, you got a pretty good report from the doctor, though.
Yeah, you know, I'm in pretty good shape apparently for the shape I'm in. I was a little disappointed with the results of the stress test, but the cardiologist, the meeting with the cardiologist was very, very positive. And the big news, I guess, is the fact that when they were doing all the work, they checked everything else out on the heart, and all the rest of the arteries seemed good. And what damage was done, she seems to believe, with exercise and proper diet and maintenance, most of that loss can be regained. So, yeah, it was very positive, Rich. I'm very thankful.
That's good. So what is going to be the great Tim McLeod's new exercise regimen once you're fully healthy? What are you going to be doing to stay in shape?
Well, the first thing I got to do is change my shape from rotund to a little bit more firm, Rich. That's going to be one of my goals. I know round is a shape, okay, but it's not for me. Definitely can't. A lot of we're going to start with is a lot of walking. You know, do what I can do and just keep increasing it. And I will be getting set up on a program with the physiotherapy department here at our hospital. And I'm sure somewhere in that process there will be a meeting with a dietitian, because I learned that the higher you score on the food test, it's not necessarily a good thing, Rich.
Not a good thing. Yeah, Timmy, I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, your heart will get in great shape, but everything else is going to hurt. Just so you know, from a guy who exercises all the time, everything else will hurt, which I guess is a good trade-off, but the knees and everything else are going to hurt.
I got chronic arthritis in both knees, so jogging is not in my future. Yeah, well, I know it's going to hurt, but you know what? Sometimes you got to have a little pain for a little gain, right?
Yeah. What about like biking? I mean, that's I know you have the biking weather there in Canada is about 3 weeks long, but you could get an inside bike.
Well, yeah, I tried pedaling my ass once, but didn't get anything for it, so gave up on it.
Yeah. One of the funniest lines, Tim, did you really say this to the doctor that when they asked what kind of exercise you did and you asked them if jogging the mind was one of those? I broke up. I was crying when I read that. It was so funny.
Yes. You know what? I had the chief doctor from the intensive care unit reading me a chart and going through all of the things that are necessary. And he was a very nice man, English accent. He went through the whole smoking thing, and his father smoked, and it was a great discussion. But apparently I might have ruined it a little bit when I used exactly that line. Jogging my memory is not going to cut it, is it? And he sort of smiled at me, sort of laughed, and then sort of shook his head. And the same reaction everybody gives me, I think, Rich.
Yeah, it's funny. Doctors really have no sense of humor. I've done that kind of stuff before. You say something clever. I think I told you about the urologist kind of and he kind of looked at me in disgust, and you feel okay. I can be serious for one moment, but just one.
Well, you know, my GP, one of the reasons I love him so much is he laughs at all my jokes.
Well, there you go. Sign of a good doctor.
How can you ask for anything better?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, sign up a good doctor. Laughs at your bad jokes. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, and it's not like he's humoring me. He knows I'm coming back, right?
Exactly, Timmy. Exactly. So, but I'm glad I got a good report. Continue to get better. And any sense for when you'll go back to work? Or are you ever going to go back to work?
That one's TBD. We're going to be working on that. My goal is to return to work. A lot will depend on the next month to 3 months and how my progress develops as far as getting strength in that old ticker back. Right now I'm running at about 63%, and it's a good 63%, but I need closer to 90, 95 to be able to do the job that I once was. So my goal is to get back there. Only time will tell. One day at a time, Rich.
And one day at a time. Well, great, Timmy. Great. Thanks so much for sharing. I know for those of you, and everybody loves to hear how you're doing, Timmy. I mean, because everybody cares. So it's good. So thanks for taking a few moments to do that.
Well, it's very much appreciated. And my thanks to all of our listeners for the many, many kind greetings and thoughts. It is truly appreciated and won't be forgotten. Thank you very much.
So, Timmy, I thought we'd start the day off. And I've been taking it pretty easy with you. I've tried to add no stress to your life, but at 63%, I'm thinking your heart can handle What do we do, Timmy, when you guess? Oh, guess the player. I forgot the name. Maybe my mind is going. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, you know, there's some advantages, Rich, because you'll meet and make new friends every day.
Exactly, Timmy. That's very, very funny. So I haven't played it. We haven't played a guess the player. If you recall, literally, Tim, I said, I'm going to give him a break, but it's time, Tim, to play guess the player. Are you ready?
I sure am, Rich, and I'm looking forward to it. Finishing second. There's nothing wrong with second.
So this will be a two-part guess the player, Tim. The first will be, of course, well, first of all, do you want to do a guess the player first and then not a guess the player, but advise Rich on a moral dilemma? How about we do guess the player and then we'll do advise Rich on a moral dilemma?
That sounds good to me.
All right, Timmy. So let me get the music going. Where is the music here? Let's see. Oh, here we go. All right, Timmy. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. You still there? Yep.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going nowhere.
All right. Every time I hit the play button. Oh, there it goes. Okay, Timmy. This pitcher, I'll give you a hint. This pitcher was once a great starting pitcher. He's had a real struggle, didn't look good, and all of a sudden he has turned it on over the past month. He now is sporting a 3.79 ERA, but hardly giving up any runs over the last couple of games. Strikeout per nine is 7.88. Walk per nine is 3.36. He's now won six games, Timmy. Who is this pitcher?
Well, I know it's not Carlos Quintana. We can try to take that one off the list quick.
So I'll give you a hint, Timmy. We have a steak and liquor bet with this guy.
Steak and liquor bet with this guy.
Yes,
we've had
we
so
do.
Many of those, Rich. That really doesn't help much.
I don't even remember, Timmy. The only ones I actually remember. Oh, I got to get the music going. The only ones I remember are the ones that I'm winning. So big, tall guy, very funny, very likable guy.
Very funny, likable guy. Okay.
And if he was Tim McCloud, that would have been
that rules out Strickland.
Great stuff. So I'm going to give it, Timmy. All right, you're, this is too much, Timmy. I'm going to tell you, Adam Wainwright.
Adam Wainwright. Oh yes, the guy that I condemned to purgatory a couple months ago. Yeah, it looks like he has turned things around for now.
Yeah. For now. Oh, come on, Timmy. Now it's I haven't checked Ian Kennedy. You have Ian Kennedy. I have Adam Wainwright. But Timmy, that's not bad. 3.79 ERA, six wins. I think the last three games, if I take a look at his play log, I mean game log, he's been doing quite well here over the last few games. And for a while, all he could beat was the Chicago Cubs.
Well, yeah, it's. I'm happy to see he's turned it around. I won't mind paying up on that one, Rich, because I will be, it looks like.
The last four games against Chicago, against the San Francisco, at Colorado, and home against the Dodgers, Timmy, he's given up one run. Timmy, one run in 14, 26 innings.
Yeah, but my next question was, did he only pitch three innings? But that's a little too sarcastic for even me.
that's bad, Timmy. That's really bad. Okay, here's the moral dilemma, Timmy. I'll play the music again. So, so Lori came to me yesterday and said, I gotta keep my voice down because she's in the next room. She came to me yesterday and said, I want to go to the Chihuly exhibit. Timmy, do you know what a Chihuly is?
I don't think it's same thing I'm thinking, so I'm going to let you explain, Rich.
So Chihuly's a guy named Dale Chihuly. He's a modern artist who does lots of stuff with glass blowing and makes these beautiful sculptures and stuff like that. She goes, yeah, you have one. He says, we own one. I go, okay, yeah, that thing. She goes, okay, I know what it is. He's got a big art exhibit at the Botanical Garden. New York Botanical Garden. I've gone, oh dear God, like getting to the Bronx is like impossible. So I'm thinking 2 hours there. I'm going to think, oh man, this is going to be brutal. So anyway, get there, 2 hours to get there, just miserable to get there. We go in and it's beautiful, Timmy, but they've got this audio thing you can get on your iPhone and you can listen to them tell you about all of this stuff. So okay. I start listening to it, and this woman's jabbering on about Dale Chihuly and blah, blah, blah. So I said, you know, I got my iPhone here. I've got my MLB app. It's 1:30. Who's going to know if I switch over to the ball game?
Was that wrong? I knew where this was going, Rich, right away. I had a hunch.
Was this wrong, Tim? Was this wrong?
It's only wrong, Rich, when you get caught. If you didn't get caught, no, you're doing just fine. And, you know, keeping your voice down is probably not a bad plan.
Yeah, she would go, isn't that interesting? Uh-huh, very, very interesting. You know, 'cause we're listening to the same recording.
Yeah. Well, one of the keys I have found to a successful relationship, Rich, is the male of the species being able to nod and smile and do it a lot. It works.
Yeah, it was very, very funny. So it was beautiful stuff. And fortunately, we didn't buy another one. But it was great. We had a beautiful day, yeah. Fun time. But I did catch an inning of the ball game, the Yankees in Toronto. So and then
yeah,
I felt guilty.
And you know, it was a great game. You probably would have been filled with remorse had you looked at the line score and not witnessed it. So, you know, both people are happy. You nodded, smiled. Life is good.
Life is good. Timmy, let's get to some breakout pitchers and then maybe some Back to the Future breakout pitchers. And that's why I wanted to bring up Adam Wainwright. He would fit into our Back to the Future. And just tell me if this is real or not. I've got four guys that we've been waiting for breakouts on. Maybe we have them, maybe we don't. And then guys that is like, is this really happening? First one, Timmy, is Jimmy Nelson. He's shown flashes in the past, but it looks like maybe he's gotten it done. 64 innings pitch, a 9 strikeout per inning, 2.24 walks per 9, 3.36 ERA. Outpitched Clayton Kershaw last week. It was amazing. 47% ground ball rate, a 330 BABIP. So it looks like there's probably some help coming on his ERA and a 303 FIP. Is Jimmy Nelson breaking out, Tim?
Yes, he is. He's definitely for real. And I'm trying right now to acquire him in tote, but not having too much luck. I got somebody in a squeeze where he could use some saves, and I'm trying to lowball. Go figure, huh? And,
yeah, go figure.
Yeah. any interest in Marte by any chance, Rich? Just kidding.
I know you have Francis Martez, at least you did. I double dare you to offer Francis Martez for Jimmy Nelson. That would be funny.
Well, yeah. Yeah, if you throw Jimmy Nelson in, I'll do it, Rich. I will.
Really, really funny. Okay, so you think I think the breakout is real. All the numbers point to the breakout being real.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Dylan Bundy, Timmy, this has been interesting. This is a guy that we've been waiting. He's been injured, and he looks all world. I mean, top 15 pitcher at the moment in fantasy, 71 and two-thirds innings pitch. Only a 6 strikeout per 9, a 2.51 walk per 9, 32% ground ball rate, so he's primarily a fly ball pitcher, and 83.8% strand rate. That means the average as you look for is 75%, so many people that are getting on base are not scoring, and that has a chance to regulate a little bit. 2.89 ERA, but a 4.05 whip. And, Timmy, as we've talked about in the past, this is a guy's velocity who has been down this year.
Yeah, no, I'm a strong believer in Bundy. I think he's very real. The only concern I have with Bundy is the workload. You know, hey, what happens when we get into, you know, the beginning of August, the middle of August? Hey, I hope for common sense sake that the O's don't absolutely wear his arm out, but they're in a race in a tight division, so I wouldn't be overly shocked if they do. And that's my only concern with Bundy is the workload as we approach summer.
Yeah, I mean, I love Bundy. I've been on Bundy from day one, and I've been rewarded this year, Timmy. But I do think you're going to see some correction coming here over the, you know, we're not saying the second half yet, but it's getting close to being able to say the second half. But I think you could see him, instead of pitching to a 3 ERA, you could see him pitching to a 4 or 4.25 ERA and not be all that surprised. The strikeout rate is a little disconcerting, and the velocity drop. I know he's doing it to try to, you know, get better control, get better fastball command, but it almost feels like he's dialed it back too much.
Yeah, I guess only time will tell. The other tough thing with Bundy is the division he's in. The AL East is not an easy division. And now the Jays have everybody back healthy. It's not going to get any easier.
It is not indeed, Timmy. Let's just take a real quick look at his game log and figure out, see who he has pitched against, just to see if there's anything that's there. So Toronto, Boston. So the first four games were a very tough, struggling Toronto team and a struggling Boston team. Then he got Tampa Bay, Boston. He's faced Boston four times. Wow. Then he got home against Chicago White Sox, at Kansas City, at Detroit, home against the Twins, and home against the Yankees. So he hasn't played the Yankees very much. He's played the Boston a ton. So that's a pretty – he's pitched against some pretty good teams.
Yeah, he caught Toronto early, I believe, while everybody was hurt. But I believe I was reading somewhere or heard somewhere today that they don't play again in Baltimore until the middle of September. Like, who designs these schedules, Rich? I shake my head on occasion.
Well, if he's pitched against Boston four times, that means that they've already played at least 12 games against Boston. So it could be the same thing with the Red Sox.
Well, yeah, it just seems bizarre sometimes when you look at the way the scheduling is set up.
Totally agree with you, Timmy. Luis Severino, I thought he was a reliever. I've definitely been wrong on it so far because he has been pitching really well this year. 61 and a third innings, 10 strikeouts per nine, 2.2 walks per nine. I never would have guessed that. 45% ground ball rate, you like that. 282 batting average on balls in play, actually showing there could be some ups in his ERA, and an 80% strand rate, a little high, 2.93 ERA and a 3.06 whip. Is Luis Severino for real?
He is for real for now, but I still agree with your assessment, and I think he's a reliever. I think we're going to catch a year, maybe two, maybe three, but I don't think the body, the frame is going to is going to be able to handle 180 to 200 innings on an ongoing basis. So even though you might have been wrong for now, I don't think you're wrong for down the road. I still see him and Marcus Stroman both as relief pitchers 2 to 3 years out.
Yeah, you're already seeing Danny Salazar move to the bullpen, another shortish kind of right-handed pitcher. So, I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's really – I mean, when you got most pitchers are 6'4", 6'5", you know, and you get these little guys that are 6 feet tall, it's, you know, it's 200 innings tough to get out of them.
Well, yeah, and a lot of these guys are, you know, 185 on the chart, but some of them I think have a hard time pushing 170. You know, Stroman's a big, strong kid. I think Severino is very real, and I would love to own him right now for this year, maybe the next couple, but I think at some point in time, your assessment is correct. He's a bullpen arm, a closer.
Robbie Ray, Timmy, this is a guy that I wanted to get in my NFBC team, and I just missed him by a pick because he was going at a very reasonable ADP. 69 innings pitched, almost 11 strikeouts per nine, 3.78 walk per nine, still not good, a 39% ground ball rate, just okay, 256 batting average of balls in play, 79% strand rate. He's got a 3 ERA and a 3.28 FIP. Robbie Ray for real, Tim?
Yeah, he's for real, but I think we are going to see some moderate correcting on occasion over the balance of the season. Yeah, his past two starts, 16 innings, no walks, nary a walk in sight. You know, the hit rate's down. The strikeout rate is exactly where you want it. I just think at some point in time, he'll go through a span where he walks three or four and two, three outings back-to-back, and it'll drive the ERA up. But would I like to own him? You betcha. I have no problems, and even that correction I don't think is going to be to the point where it's going to be that disconcerting, Rich.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. I agree with you. I like them coming into this year where you could get them in the draft, and I wish I had them. I just don't. Let's get some of these older guys, Timmy, which I'm shocked at all of them. First is Irving Santana. This was before he got totally annihilated last night. Annihilated is too strong a word. He got the grand slam number 600 by Albert Pujols. 77 innings pitch with Irving Santana, 6.55 walk strikeout per nine, a 3.39 walk per nine, 41% ground ball rate, a 143 batting average of balls in play. That is not a misprint, Tim. A 143 batting average of balls in play, a 91% strand rate. So what that means for you who are not very statistically oriented, that means almost every ball that's being hit is being caught, and almost every guy that's getting on is not going anywhere, which is just not going to – that's unreal. 3.38 ERA, again, it's been corrected a little bit, 3.81 FIP. Tim, this looks like a massive correction coming.
Well, yeah, if you look at his past six starts today, four innings pitch, seven earned runs. Seven innings pitch, one earned run. Nine innings pitched, a two-hit shutout. Seven innings pitched, five earned runs. Seven innings pitched, a two-hit shutout. Six innings pitched, six earned runs. I'm predicting a 340, 350 ERA at year's end. He's, even when he has been pitching good, he's surrounding it by poor outings. And I think over the course of the balance of the year, those will work their way out to the point where He's gonna be a solid pitcher, but he's not what we've seen.
Yeah, I would tell you to sell high, but no one's buying on Irving. No one's gonna buy on all four of these guys. Maybe the last guy. No one's buying on these guys. That's the problem. And I guess if you have them, you go throw them out there. But if I'm the Minnesota Twins, I am selling Irving Santana as fast as I can, Timmy, and trying to get somebody for him. The next guy is Michael Leake, 6'8 and a third innings pitch, a 6.32 strikeout per nine, a 1.45 walk per nine, not walking anybody. Tons of ground balls, a 307 BABIP, which is good, 84% strand rate, a little high, 224 ERA, but a 326 FIP. What about Mike Leake, Tim?
Well, I wish I owned him in more spots just so I could say I'm taking a leak. But unfortunately, Rich, I didn't. And I like what I've seen, but there is a correction that's going to occur. And I think we've seen it in the past two starts. He's allowed five and four earned runs, respectively, in those past two starts. I think he's going to be a solid pitcher, but nowhere near what we've seen.
So not as much of a correction as Irving Santana, but I think there's definitely a correction coming. The next guy is remarkable to me. You could have got this guy on the waiver wire the first two or three weeks of the year. That's Jason Vargas. 69 and a third innings pitch, seven strikeouts per nine, two walks per nine, 37% ground ball rate, a 278 batting average of balls in play, 85% strand rate, a 208 ERA, and a 316 FIP, and he's throwing about 87 miles an hour.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't even recommend him, I don't think, at the beginning of the year as a waiver wire pickup. That's how little belief I had in Vargas. And, you know, he doesn't have the big strikeout pitch. His best season ever is a 3.71 ERA in 2014. I think he's going to struggle to best that 3.71 ERA. And if he does, we'll call it a career year.
Yeah, I mean, this is Timmy, 86.98. That's his fastball rate. I mean, he's got good secondary pitches. He's got good deception as delivery. You know, he's right. You know, he's got a lot of things out there. He just doesn't throw that hard. And I think eventually he's going to be exposed. And it'll be interesting when we get to the trading deadline or before the trading deadline. Do the Royals, are they able to get anything for him? And I just don't think they can.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a relatively tough sell. And the other thing you got to look at with Vargas moving forward is with the likes of Elfides Escobar and Alex Gordon in that lineup, how much offensive support is he going to get? And moving forward, are we going to see Moose moved? Are we going to see Kane moved? Offensively, the Royals could be a dreadful team in the second half.
Yeah, and I don't think he's, you know, I mean, look, Jason Vargas is going to get moved. It's just the question is, I'm curious of how much is he going to garner back. In fact, he might be one of the more, given how everybody needs pitching, he might be one of the better trade chips that the Royals have at the moment. And a lefty that's, it's got a 2 ERA. It just need to move quickly because that 2 is going to turn to a 4. And there's a lot of teams out there who still don't get it, and they'll go paying for him.
Well, yeah, I definitely believe the best is behind him, definitely.
Yeah. Last guy, Timmy, is probably the one who I think has the most interesting statistics and profile, just because he's still – I think the youngest of all of these guys, and he's in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's had a remarkable run at changing pitchers, and that's Ivan Nova, 77 innings pitched, 4.68 walk strikeouts per nine, not striking out anybody. Get this, Tim, 0.7 walk per nine. It's not walking anybody. 50% ground ball rate, a 283 BABIP, which isn't bad, a 74 strand rate, which isn't bad, 292 ERA with a 316 FIP, not bad. This looks pretty real to me.
Yeah, the only thing I find concerning, Rich, is over the past five starts, 35 innings. How many strikeouts do you think Nova has?
Well, based on this, I would say about 10?
13.
Yeah. It's not striking out anybody. When he first came up before Tommy John surgery with the Yankees, I mean, he was a strikeout pitcher.
He sure was. And what concerns me is the fact that, you know, hey, it's fine he's getting the ground balls, he's getting the outs, but does he have a pitch he can go to get that strikeout when there's runners on second and third? I'm not as bullish or optimistic on Nova as I think some are. And I could very easily see an ERA in the 350 to 4 range over the balance of the season.
That's reasonable, Tim. That's reasonable. I think it looks like his out pitch, from what I'm looking at the stats and looking at PitchFX data, it looks like that curveball is been the thing that's been unhittable. So the spin rate is very, very high on that. Sinker ball pitcher, that's why he's getting the ground balls. But there's a chance he gets moved, Tim. I think there's going to be a fire sale in Pittsburgh as well.
Yeah, I think there is as well. One of the reasons that I picked up Rivero in virtually every league I could, because I think Watson's going to get moved. I think the odds are good that McCutchen gets moved. You know, it's a 14-plus mil option for next year. Does Pittsburgh want to pay that money next year? You know, you look at Watson, you look at Nova. I think there's a lot of players in Pittsburgh that could be playing on other teams come the middle of July, end of July.
I think the Rivero call is excellent, Timmy. And I know that because I play in one of our dynasty league. There's just a guy who's won, I think, 4 years in a row. Just a great player. He's got Watson on his team. He's peddling from anybody he can get, which you know the guy I'm talking about. I mean, it's pretty much rest assured this guy is not going to Watson will not be the closer for very much longer. It's all written. Everything is like, why is he trying to trade this guy? And you go, oh, okay, now I know.
Well, yeah, and I think when Watson does move on, he doesn't move into a closer situation. He moves into a situational role. That's why somebody would want him, to get those tough outs. And Watson's value is going to go from maybe top 15 closer to waiver wire fodder.
Yeah, top mate. I don't know if I put him 15, maybe top 20. I mean, he hasn't been very good, so at least recently. But I think you're right. I think he loses that job. I think he's going to lose. You could see him lose in the next 6 weeks because, I mean, a lefty reliever? Come on. I mean, he's going to be incredibly valuable. And when the Pittsburgh Pirates gave up Mark Melanson last year to the, you know, during the stretch run to the Nationals, I mean, that's when they got Rivero, and that was the big guy that they got. They got two lefties in exchange for him, and I think he becomes the closer.
Well, you know, when you look at here's my fearless prediction. The Jays pick him up. Grilly right now is really really struggling in a bad way. And I think he's pretty much done in the Jays pen, and the Jays could use some bullpen help. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Jays go after Watson. Shut up, Osuna.
I think there's, let's face it, Timmy, there's six teams that get into the playoffs, right? So the two that get into the play-in game, and then one goes on. So I guess that's five, so it's 10. There's really only 12 teams that are in it. I mean, the most of the Major League Baseball is already out of it. So I think that guys like Watson can go to any one of those 12 teams, and it wouldn't be a shock, because I think anybody's going to take a lefty reliever like that.
Well, yeah, definitely. And I think this year, I think with the number of teams that are out of it this early, I think moving early might be the prudent approach for some of these teams.
Yep, I agree. And it usually doesn't happen until around the 4th of July. So we're about a month away from starting to see things go on, because most of the teams, Tim, as you were coming on the air, I was talking about the minor league draft coming up, or the MLB's first year player draft. I think they might be just called the MLB draft now. Happens next week. So everybody's involved in doing that. And then so this week and next week and probably the week after that are going to be consumed with all of that. Then it's going to be about, all right, how do I improve my major league team? And that's when you're going to start to see the moves happen. So if you're wondering why you don't see a lot happening now, it's because the draft is going on and everybody's preoccupied with that.
Yeah, I'm old school. I still call it the June amateur, but I'm probably one of few.
I guess they're still all amateur players. The only way they could be drafted, though, I'm sure some college guys are getting paid. Anyway, when we get back, Tim, we're going to talk about the news. It's old news, Timmy, but we still have to talk about it. And that's Michael Trout going on the DL for the first time in his career and out for anywhere from 5 to 8 weeks. I've heard he's had surgery already. I know he was there when Albert Pujols hit his home run, and he saw the thing in the splint and so forth. Hopefully he didn't hurt it, giving him a high five. But just sad. I mean, I own him in one league. Timmy, that team actually did better without Michael Trout because I had Cole Calhoun take his place and hit three home runs and hit like 500 this week. So, I mean, I got dumb luck and I'll take it. Knocked 1 week off the Mike Trout being gone. But, it's sad, right?
Yeah, it's definitely sad for the game. He's the best player in the game, bar none. Nobody is anywhere close to being on his level on the offensive side of things. And yeah, it's sad to see him not there, but five to 8 weeks isn't as bad a prognosis as what it could have been. And I'm leaning towards believing we'll see him back closer to the five, because I think he wants to be back playing. He doesn't want to be on the DL. He wants to be on the field. And I think he's going to go about his rehab in a fashion that gets him back as soon as possible, Rich.
Yeah, I think Cole Calhoun said that Mike Trout does everything better than any other player. He'll probably do the rehab better than any other player, which I thought was very, very funny. I hope he gets back in time. But the thing I do worry about, Timmy, now, if we put our analytical hats on, he hurt his thumb, the UCL tear in his thumb. Your hands is all where your power is. You could argue his power is going to be down. I mean, don't know if it's the fact, but logic would say his power would be down. And you got to know he's going to be a little fearful of trying to steal a base. I mean, why? He's not going to all of a sudden switch and go in feet first. I'm sure he'll wear that oven mitt that now seems to be very, very popular. But you got to believe he's going to be a little gun shy because the tender and so forth. Is he going to steal any bases? So is the power going to be down and the stolen base is going to be down? That would seem, logic would seem to play that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not so much concerned about the power. Excuse me, because it wasn't a wrist injury. I'm not concerned about the power. I think the stolen bases will definitely be down. I can't see him in his second game back diving into second base. And guaranteed, his days of hitchhiking are finished.
So, Timmy, let's talk about you have him in a redraft league, and given how good he's been, let's say that you were in the top three with a chance to win some money in this league or actually win the whole thing. Would you be trading him?
It would depend on the circumstances. Let's just use DL2 as a fine example. You have about a 30-point lead right now, and you own Mike Trout. Mm-hmm. Are you in a hurry to trade him? My guess would be an emphatic no. You can ride it out and still probably end up being 15 points ahead of the pack, especially now that you've picked up Cowboy Cole Calhoun. It's a lock. So why would you look at panicking and making a move? That's just not a good, smart move. Now, in a league that's incredibly tight, that changes things a little bit. Five weeks of production, the difference between the Trout and your replacement, that might have me a bit more concerned, but I wouldn't sell low on Trout at all. I would want top dollar and then some. No bargains.
Yeah, so as you know, Timmy, I put Michael Trout up on the block, and not to say I wanted to trade him, and that's just a personal example, but to me, I only saw really three, maybe four players who had to be included in the deal. Bryce Harper, Paul Goldschmidt, potentially Mookie Betts. And I wanted another piece on top of that. I mean, that's what it was really got down to that. And I talked to the guy who owned Paul Goldschmidt of that league, and he said, look, Paul Goldschmidt's my favorite player. I'm not trading him. What are you going to do? Okay. Mike Trout's my favorite player, so I don't want to trade him either. But, you know, sometimes people just don't want to trade the guys. I wasn't looking for a volume play, and I don't think Mike Trout owners should be looking for volume. I think you got to go for somebody who is not in contention, but you got to get a top-tier player back. Otherwise, particularly in a dynasty league, you might as well just lick your wounds and keep going.
Well, yeah, we own Trout in DL5. We're sitting in, I think, ninth spot this morning. Am I moving Mike Trout? Am I even entertaining moving Mike Trout? Not on your life. It's simply not going to happen. It's just something that will postpone our plans until 2018. So be it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing in keeper leagues and dynasty leagues. And redraft leagues, I think the calculus changes a little bit. If you've got a chance to win and you really believe that Trout's maybe going to come back as 80% Mike Trout, which probably still makes him the best player in the league, you don't think he's going to steal any bases, and somebody's going to offer you Jose Altuve, I don't know, you know, maybe.
A player like Altuve would be a huge chip, or a player like Clayton Kershaw or Chris Sale plus, you know, any of those guys that can make a significant difference in your counting stats and do it fairly quickly. Yeah, you have to entertain it. But if I was looking at Altuve, I'd still want plus, definitely.
Yeah, it's funny that DL2 team. I lost Freddie Freeman as well, so I lost my best two players, and I've gone up. And I know it's all going to reverse. I get it. But I looked at, like, how am I doing this, and I realize, oh, I've got Nolan Arenado, and I got Jose Altuve, and oh, by the way, I've got Zach Cozart. Have you seen what Zach Cozart's done this? He's like one of the best shortstops in the game, Timmy. I don't know. We haven't talked about him at all. I mean, he's a big part of me doing so well in that league.
Well, yeah, he's defying the odds. He had two more homers and five RBIs today. He's absolutely killing it. And my guess is he was somewhere between a 24th and 35th round pick in redraft leagues.
Absolutely. And it is amazing. He has got only seven home runs, but it seems like at 37 strikeouts, 29 walks, .335 batting average, a .423 on base percentage, even got two stolen bases. I mean, when you expected him maybe to be your middle infielder and he's putting that production out, it's all goodness to me. Now, you know, when that happens, the stars are aligning for your team.
Yeah, it's time to buy a Powerball or two.
Exactly. All right, so replacing Michael Trout, it's almost tough to believe this. It's Eric Young Jr. or Ben Revere. Timmy, any interest in either one? I mean, they're going to provide a little bit of speed. I don't know if they're very good, but they do have speed.
Well, yeah, you got to fill in the hole somehow. And You know, I've recommended some outfielders on the waiver wire this week. Young is one of them. He will get you some stolen bases, assuming he can get to first base.
Yeah, I think if you're desperate for speed, okay, yeah, go pick him up. But man, don't expect much. Eric Young Jr. both and Ben Revere, and they can, like anybody, they can have a good 2 or 3 weeks. But just remember, they're Eric Young Jr. and Ben Revere. They're fourth and fifth outfielders for a reason.
Well, exactly. And, yeah, you know, when you look at the Angels, that's even more of a mess because not only did they lose Trout, they lost Cameron Maben, who was playing lights out. And you just don't replace those players.
Are you going to throw a buck down on David Paulino? I know that you have him written up in your waiver wire article, which we'll get to at the end here. But the Astros all of a sudden have a ton of guys on the DL, and it seems like they're using that as almost a go rest up for a while so that Charlie Morton's on there, I think, for legitimate reason. Musgrove, it's debatable why he's on there, but they think he might make his next two starts. Now they're not sure he's going to make his first one. But what about David Paulino? Looked pretty good as his first start this year.
Yeah, between the Astros and the Dodgers, MLB is going to start asking for doctor's notes any day now. Those two teams could end up being the demise of the 10-day DL with the way they're using it. But as far as Paulino is concerned, yeah, he's got two great starts next week. I don't know what he's got to look forward to after those two starts, but if you're looking at trying to stream starting pitching, that's why I included him on the waiver wire. He's got two good matchups.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. Big guy. You know, it was going to be him or Francis Martez, but Martez has just not been very good this year, and Paulino got the call and is taking advantage of it. But Timmy, Brad Peacock, holy cow, Brad Peacock has been very good.
Yeah, I tried picking him up in tote, lost out on the bid, managed to pick him up in my NFBC, and yeah, it's, you know, I say a prayer every night to the fantasy gods that Brad Peacock, of all people, keeps it up.
Yeah, absolutely, Timmy. Sam Dyson saved 38 games last year. He pitched a 2.43 ERA. He was rewarded and put on the U.S. World Baseball Classic team, wins a gold medal or whatever they win for, you know, for winning that. He was DFA'd this week, Timmy, because you don't want to go over stats. I mean, they've been terrible. Like, what happened to Sam Dyson? I mean, I know he's a sinker ball pitcher, and if the ball doesn't sink, just like we've seen with a lot of other sinker ball pitchers, it can be ugly. Is that all we saw with Sam Dyson? The ball stopped sinking, and he started giving up home runs and just really, really hard-hit balls?
I guess my question when you look at Sam Dyson, was he ever really all that good in the first place? I don't think so. You look at the Rangers model. Who was the closer before Sam Dyson? Sean Tolleson, I think. How long did Sean Tolleson last? What was the last good closer the Rangers had? Feliz?
Yeah, I mean, I was about to say Feliz, but he was only a closer for a year and a half. Wasn't C.J. Wilson a closer for them for a bit?
Yeah, I think he might have been. I was never a big fan of C.J. Wilson, but it seems like the Rangers shuffle guys in, and once they get on a roll, the job's there. They hold it for so long, and at some point in time, reality catches up, and now Matt Bush is a closer.
Yeah, well, Matt Bush has got a better arm than all those guys. But my question for you is, and maybe the answer is no, I was just thinking, you know, Dyson, with that great year he had last year and the fact that he was picked up by the, you know, the World Baseball Classic guys, thinking he could do stuff, and he pitched okay. You know, in the World Baseball Classic, I think he was the closer until he and Luke Gregerson, I think, split the closing duties for the U.S. Is he a sneaky pickup in a dynasty league, or is this somebody cut loose?
Only if you're allowed to roster Japanese and Korean players, Rich.
So the answer is no. Okay, all right. Just asking, Timmy. I got him rostered in a couple of leagues. I'll go ahead and drop him this evening and be done with it. So.
Yeah, I don't see anything positive coming out of that moving forward.
What are your thoughts on Denelson Lamet, Timmy, the young San Diego Padre? I think it's L-A-M-E-T. I think it's Lamet. I think I told everybody I knew who he was. I never saw him pitched in the minor leagues. He's had a couple of good outings. He's a fastball changeup guy, does not have a curveball. No, I'm sorry, he's a fastball curveball, does not have a changeup. So against opposite arms, he's going to struggle with a little bit. But what are your thoughts on him?
I liked what I saw. I picked him up in a couple leagues, and I'm relatively happy. I think there's going to be good days and bad days, but drum roll, please. There is no buyer's limit for me.
So I don't. I've only got him in one league. I haven't dared play him yet. I don't know what his upcoming games are this week, but I mean, you have to admit, he's playing against Colorado at home. That's actually a reasonable matchup. Colorado does not play well away from Coors Field.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if I'd wheel him out there in Coors right away, but at home, I'll be rolling him out in all my leagues based on the fact that the worst that can possibly happen isn't going to change my ERA all that much this year. ERA and WHIP have been a bit of a task, to say the least.
May I divert the conversation for just a moment, Tim?
You certainly may.
So I've been playing a lot of daily fantasy baseball this year, and I've gotten to a point of pretty much playing only the late games because I've discovered I'm not good enough in the daily fantasy game to look at all, you know, I can concentrate when there's four or five games going on, Timmy, because then I can analyze each player and so forth. I don't have the spreadsheets and I don't have all the calculations figured out to very quickly plug in an optimal lineup and so forth. I've done that and I've done okay with it. I haven't won any big money, but I've won more than I've lost, if you know what I mean. But what I have found in playing this, first of all, it's a hard game. It's a really hard game out on FanDuel. I mean, it's completely different. And I played enough. I mean, I'm literally trying to play every day to try to figure this out. One, it's a harder game because I don't quite understand it. And you've got to have like really good preparation. But now I'm beginning to quote off the top of my head, like who plays good against lefties and who plays good away from home and on home and all that. And then there's a lot of luck because you go for a really good starting pitcher because that's where you want to spend all your money. And you've got to pick up, you know, the guys that costs very little money and you hope that they crank out a home run. But the thing that I have found and I've learned is you're playing against professional gamblers in this daily fantasy, particularly the big tournaments. And what they will do, Timmy, is you can have up to 150 entries into each tournament and they'll literally put 150 entries in there. And they're well-researched, and then they'll figure out their like core three or four players, and then they'll try to do almost every permutation of the other types of players that are there to figure out who their team is. So it's not unusual for you to take the leaderboard and see 1 through 10, six spots taken up by the same guy, by the same owner, because they got the four core guys right. And then they picked up enough, you know, random guys that they did because they put in 150. You know how many entries I have, Timmy? I have one. So I'm here to tell everybody, even though they are a sponsor, and it's a lot of fun, don't get me wrong. If you're going to do this and win big money, it's almost impossible to do it. The odds are so far against you because you don't have the software. There's no way you have the time to do the research to figure all this stuff out. And you don't have the capital, right? Because it only costs $5 to enter this, but you got to put in $750 for each tournament you do. So let's call it $1,000 and you're playing five or six tournaments a night. That's what these guys are doing. You have to have that kind of capital and that kind of time to do all of that to try to win big money. So if you think you're going to do this, that's what you have to do to play daily fantasy sports.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I don't play it, because I don't have the bankroll, and I really don't have the interest in playing the game of betting on 150 combinations 7 days a week, 52 weeks of the year. And, hey, if that's your game, if that's what you want to play, all the more power to you. But I have no interest in advancing my mathematical skills at this stage of my life, none.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it gets down to almost, you know, it's funny. One of my other hobbies is, you know, just like stock trading and stuff like that. And I built complicated
Right.
models there. It's very similar to that to me. I mean, it's almost, in fact, I could probably adapt some of the algorithms that I've developed for that and put it to this and see if they would work out. Cause, but you've got, that's what people are doing. They're taking a look at these assets and let's call it 500 players, 700 players, and you know who they've gone against, all their tendencies and all that kind of stuff. You press a button, the software figures out what your optimal lineup should be. That's what they're doing. I mean, they're not going through like I'm doing every player and looking at them going, oh, let me go out to Fangraphs to see how they're doing against lefties. Oh, it takes too much time. It just does.
Well, yeah, the difference is this is a hobby and it's something you're doing for fun and you're enjoying it. And that's all good and well. You don't want two full-time jobs. You've already got one, right?
Exactly. And so that's kind of my long-winded thing of saying I'm having fun. I encourage people to do it because it's fun. But don't think you're going to, okay, it's time to quit the full-time job and do this. Oh, boy, you got to have some serious capital behind you, and you got some serious, serious time to do this.
Well, yeah, because what happens if those models don't pay off the first 2 weeks and you find yourself down 50,000? Well, ouch.
I know, Timmy. When we get back, we are going to do one of my favorite games, and it's called the Over-Under Game.
Sounds like fun. Looking forward to it.
I know that FanDuel's already signed up for us for the fall as well, Timmy. So, in fact, I have a little bit better chance with football. I don't know why. Cause I never watch any football games, but I have a little bit better chance on daily fantasy football than I do baseball, which is kind of funny. Ian Happ with his second home run, Timmy, after batting .214. Looked like he might get demoted, but two home runs tonight against the vaunted St. Louis Cardinals and Michael Wacha. What do you think of Ian Happ? You haven't really given me your opinion about him.
Well, my big concern with any of the Cubs right now is Madden's playing his games and he's rotating people in and out and out and in. And, you know, for all we know, it Happ is going to sit three games this week. Unless he's tearing the cover off the ball, do you have him active in your lineup? I'm very fortunate. I don't have to deal with a lot of that on my fantasy teams, but Madden is definitely maddening.
So my over-under, Timmy, I try to do a little variety here, and I'm just going to pick number C, the Chicago Cubs over-under NL champion.
They'll be the NL champion.
You think so? Over the Nationals.
Oh, sorry. NL champion. Sorry. Read it wrong. I'm thinking division. They will be in the race, but they won't do it this year. They'll come in second.
Because they're 500, Timmy, at the moment. I don't know if you've seen. I mean, they're up 6-4 here. But the pitching has not been that good. Kyle Hendricks has not been what he was last year. John Lester's been still pretty good. Kyle Schwarber, we're going to get to him in a minute. He's been terrible. And I think you're right. Joe Maddon is getting a little too the with the different matchups and just put a lineup out there, dude, and put your best hitters at the top and go from there.
Yeah. Well, we saw the best of Joe Maddon in the World Series last year and I wasn't impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a tough World Series and still won, Timmy. So, but he had a tough World Series. Okay. Over under the 714 percentage wise, and they won another game today. Your Houston Astros over under AL champion. That means American League champion, Timmy. That means they're going to go to the World Series.
Yep, I don't have any problems with that. They're 41-16 as of today. If you look at the division, they got 105 games left. If they go 500 the rest of the season, that gives them 93 wins. That team ain't going 500 over the rest of the season. You can pencil them in as the best team in the AL, and I believe they are your 2017 World Series champions. They haven't even looked at Yeah, Derek Fisher's tearing the ball off the cover off the ball down in the minors. And there's no room at the inn right now for Derek Fisher. They've got probably seven starting pitchers that are all on any given day capable. And who knows, at the deadline, I wouldn't rule out them adding Quintana from the White Sox. They're not in any rush. They don't have to be, and they are right now, and I believe they will be over the duration, the best team in baseball.
You said a lot, Timmy. A lot to drill down there. First of all, you're a Jose Quintana apologist. What the hell's wrong with him?
I don't think there's anything wrong physically with him. If I had to guess right now, I think the pressure of being in the media every 5 minutes with a new destination as far as where he ends up, I think that's got to be weighing on him a little bit. I think sometimes we forget that as well as being ball players, which is their job, and that's all fair and well, they're also people. And they have families. A lot of players have children. And right now, I honestly believe that the problems Quintana's facing are more mental and related to his uncertain future than they are anything physical.
Yeah, the thing that if you take a look at his performance, it's the walk rate that's up. It's a guy that's always had impeccable walk rate. And I'm looking back all the way, his professional career has never had over a 3 walk per 9. He's at 3.36, which isn't terrible. But, the ground ball rates are down. So home run to fly ball ratio is at 13%. So the ball's up, Timmy's not keeping it down, he's getting hit hard, it's just ugly, and now I care because he's on a team I have, and that team has a chance to win, and I don't need him and Jacob deGrom, what the hell happened to him this week? I don't need them doing what they did this week. Timmy, I'm not going to win if I'm getting Jose Quintana doing what he's done. So can you go talk to him for me?
Yeah, I would love to because I own him in Toad. I own him in probably 4 other leagues. And yeah, he hasn't done me any favors this year. None. Nada. Zippo.
Going back to the Astros, Timmy, they're the best team offense by far in baseball. I mean, that's just I don't know what their weak spot in that lineup is. I mean, you start off with George Springer. It's just an amazing leadoff guy. He's a high on base percentage guy, but two more home runs a day. I think he's up to 16, 17, 18, something crazy like that. And then you fall into Jose Altuve, one of the best players in the game, followed by Carlos Correa. I mean, it goes all the way down that Yuli Gurriel, who is a good baseball player, not a great baseball player, but he's batting at the bottom of the lineup, and that's just extending that lineup, and it's murderous. Unless you've got a stud going, you rest your players against the Houston Astros.
Well, yeah, the game today against Texas was over basically by, I think, the third inning. They were up 5-0, I believe it was, early. And, you look at Bregman. He hasn't had a great first half so far, and you know that it's coming. It's only a matter of time. The kid's got too much talent for it not to happen. And, no, it's, Brian McCann, it's that lineup is just
ridiculous.
Beltran's having a great year.
Bregman Bregman's batting ninth, Tim. That says a lot. Bregman is one of the best young players in the game. He's batting ninth in that lineup. He's probably going to continue to bat ninth in that lineup.
Well, yeah, he's batting about where he deserves to bat right now. But the thing is, the Astros have so much firepower. They can take a guy like Gurriel and Bregman, who I believe are both underachieving right now. They can wheel them out every day, and it doesn't hurt them. It's not a problem for the Astros to be wheeling those two players out, whereas on some teams, it could present problems.
Bregman batted 250 in April, up to 276 in May, 0 for so far in June, but the month is young, Tim, but it's a really good baseball player. It's just – yeah, he's having a tough start to the year, but not as tough as a lot. I mean, he's doing okay. It's just amazing. Kyle Schwarber, Timmy, over under 100 at bats in the minor leagues.
Under. I don't think they'll send him down.
Tim, he hit the grand slam last night. I get it. last I looked, he was batting 175. He's got moved to ninth in the order. I think they're starting to spot him only against right-handed batter, right-handed pitching now. I mean, it's not good.
No, but it's a quality 175, Rich.
I mean, it's just not, and he's striking out. I mean, I think Alan brought this up. He's striking out at a ridiculous, like 30%. I mean, I think we were talking about Trevor Story, and he kept saying, "What about Kyle Schwarber? What about Kyle Schwarber? It's the same profile." I mean, Schwarber walks more than Trevor Story, but the strikeouts are just terrible.
Yeah, he's going to right the ship. I'm not concerned about Schwarber long term. If he is sent down, it will be for a very, very short period. I'm going with the under on the 100.
Right, I'm going to drill down one more. I mean, so if I take a look at this of the stats, so 2000, he's only had 273 at bats. He had five last year, 273 plate appearances in 2015. That's the only time he's played really in the major leagues. Every time else before that was in the minor leagues and was only there for 2 years because he came up so quickly. It's interesting. If you take a look at his strikeout and walk rate, almost identical to what it was back in 2015 when he batted 246. That was his high watermark, 246. And the BABIPs are 100 points different. So you're looking at a guy who's only going to bat 230 to 250. If you're an on-base percentage league, you're going to love it. But if you're in a batting average league, Timmy, that ain't good.
No, I don't own Schwarber anywhere because I had concerns about the batting average, but I think the power is real, and I think at some point in time he'll turn it around, and the memories of the World Series are still relatively fresh. I think that buys him some time.
I got over. I think he's definitely going to be – I think he's going to get demoted. That's what I think, and particularly the Cubs are the Cubs are playing 500, Tim. The Cubs are playing 500.
Yeah, that will change.
All right. Who hits more home runs, Bryce Harper or Aaron Judge?
Well, right now Judge is up by 3. I'm going to say Harper best Judge by 10 come the end of the year.
I'm glad you said that. I don't know what the number is, but it's going to be a big number. I think there's correction coming with Aaron Judge, another guy with a 30% strikeout rate and a 410 batting average of balls in play. I know everybody's saying, gee, he hit an upper second decker, Timmy, the opposite field upper second decker, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, he's strong as an ox. His swing is shorter than everybody thought it was because of his short arms and his kind of swats at the ball. But the strikeout rate is real, and I think he's going to tire in the second half, and I think Bryce Harper is just going to go flying by him.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be close. You know, you were watching the game today. Did you see what Osuna did to him in the ninth inning?
I did not.
Slider, slider, slider in the dirt. Strikeout, he walked back to the dugout. Now, and I think more of that's going to be occurring. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Judge is a great young talent, and I think – if you give him a ball downtown, he is going to take it and park it 500 feet away. But, you know, I'm sure that teams are very, very aware of his Achilles heel, and he's going to start seeing a lot of it.
Agreed. Billy Hamilton, over under 80 stolen bases.
I'm going to go under, but close. He's dealing with a bit of a banged-up shoulder right now, and at some point in time, I really think he'll spend at least 10 days on the DL. His reckless style in the outfield, at some point in time, I think will be cause for a DL stint. So I could see 75, 78. I think he's just going to fall short of the 80 by a handful.
Yeah, I think it's to me, I agree with you, Tim. I think it's right around that 80, maybe a little short. But I love Billy Hamilton from a stolen base standpoint. Who doesn't? But if you own him in a league where you count on base percentage, Timmy, and the amount of plate appearances he's getting, it is brutal.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, there is a price to be paid, and all of his power game, I think, is behind him.
Justin Smoke, Timmy, I can't even believe I wrote this. Over under 30 home runs. He's got 13 now. Let's see it one today.
Hit one today. That's 14, Rich.
Oh, my gosh. Over under 30.
Over. We get the Jays feed up here, and all of their games are on the tube, and Justin Smoke does not look like the same player this year, not even remotely close. Of all the power bats that I've seen, he is, without a doubt, we've seen the most shocking transformation from a free-swinging, I'll get a home run once every 2 weeks sort of player, and a low batting average, to a player who actually looks like he fully understands the strike zone. I've seen him work counts. It's absolutely amazing. He's looking like the player that I think the Texas Rangers believed they had when they owned him and Chris Davis back in the day. And kudos to those who took a chance, because I really like what I'm seeing. I see him somewhere between 33 and 35 homers before it's all done.
If you're new to this game, Timmy, Justin Smoke was the Cody Bellinger 6 or 7 years ago. He was that good. Everybody thought he was going to be a superstar. He was traded for Cliff Lee, if you recall, for that stretch run for the, for the Rangers. And I think it was the Rangers. I mean, it was Phil or something. I get all the team. And he was one of the bigger busts in prospect history. And, I mean, it's encouraging to see him finally putting it together. But, damn, he could have done it a little bit earlier for those of us who owned him. So.
Well, yeah, and it is all about us. Let's face it.
That's right.
No doubt about it. But if I'm not mistaken, the Rangers kept him over Chris Davis.
I think you're right.
I think they owned both of them, and I think Davis was the first to be moved.
Yeah, so that was what everybody thought the upside was, and maybe we're finally seeing it. I think that it's over as well. It's a remarkable story, and good for him. That's all I got to say. And good for you if you drafted him or picked him up. I mean, you got lucky. Here's another two guys that you got lucky if you got. I mean, I can't even believe these two guys, I have them in the same sentence. Who hits more home runs? Logan Morrison, who has 15, maybe hit one today. I don't think he did. I think the Tampa Bay got destroyed. Or Ryan Zimmerman, who I think hit a home run today at 16. Timmy, who hits more home runs this year?
I'm going to go with Logan Morrison simply because I think he'll stay healthy longer.
It's good call. I'm going to go with Morrison as well. More home runs, Miguel Sano with 13 or Mike Moustakas, who has 14, which surprised me when I was trying to find somebody who was going to pin up against Miguel Sano. Mike Moustakas or Miguel Sano?
I'm going with Moose, and the reason I'm going with Moose is Sano is going to strike out 150 times over the balance of the season. Moose is playing well. He's hitting for the power that we thought he'd always had, the power that he demonstrated before the lost year last year. And Moose is playing for a contract next year. I think that might be a little bit of added incentive. The combination of the strikeout rates from Sano and Moose delivering as I anticipated he would, I'm going to go with Moustakas.
I think I will as well. I love Sano's power. I think his BA is going to be the problem. Just watching the St. Louis Cubs game, Timmy, and I'm seeing Dexter Fowler just threw out Anthony Rizzo trying to stretch a double to a triple. How much do the Cubs miss Dexter Fowler on that team? They have not been able to come up with a leadoff hitter.
I think they're missing him a lot more than they will ever publicly admit to. How's that?
I totally agree. I think so. Second to last one, Timmy. More home runs. Jake Lamb at 14 or Nolan Arenado at 13?
I read that twice just to make sure. I was looking for an LOL at the end of that one. I didn't find it. At some point in time, Jake Lamb will go into an extended slump where he will go 0 for a month, pick July, August, or September, and Arenado will beat him by comfortably 10 home runs.
He will not, Timmy. He will not beat him by 10 home runs. I think he'll beat him by less than 5.
I'm picking the Lamb. If he played in New York right now, I would use the old Genesis album, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, as my thoughts moving forward. How's that?
Are you willing to go steak and liquor or whatever your nutritionist puts you on?
Yes. I'm just thinking now, is but we should probably go broccoli and lean bologna. How's that?
Lean bologna. I don't think there's such a thing as. I think the definition of bologna is fat, Tim. I'm pretty sure. If you translate that from Latin, I'm pretty sure bologna means fat. So
it was a reach. On short notice, it was the best I could come up with.
The last over-under, we were going to start off with this, but we got started talking about the Cubs, and that is Albert Pujols hits number 600 last night, which I got to tell you, I watched it. I got a chance to see him hit it on television, not live, but hit it on television. I would tell you, one thing I was disappointed, there was no fanfare around 600. This is Albert Pujols hitting 600 and a chance to hit a lot more, and because he plays on the West Coast, it wasn't a big deal. They, you know, he came out, they cheered him, went over and hugged and kissed his wife and went back in the dugout. That was it. Because nobody in Los Angeles even knows how to celebrate a baseball kind of event. First of all, your thoughts on Albert Pujols hitting 600?
Yeah, it's a remarkable accomplishment. First ballot Hall of Famer, and he's one of the best hitters of this generation.
What's remarkable, 600. Now, because I got to thinking Mike Trout, the best player in the game by far. He's probably going to – he's at 284 now. So at age 25, he'll be 26, I believe, in August. But his 25th year, let's say he comfortably hits about 200. He's got to hit 400 more home runs to get to 600. His average is 35 a year. If he does that for the next 10 years, at age 35, Michael Trout's only going to have 550 home runs. That's how good Albert Pujols has been throughout his career.
Yeah, when you do the math, it's mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is. I mean, if it all goes well, Mike Trout will hit 600 when he's probably 37 years old, which is the same age as Albert Pujols. For those of you who never got a chance to see Albert Pujols in his prime, now he's gimping around, you know, running around. When he was younger with the St. Louis Cardinals, particularly early in his career, wasn't as athletic as Michael Trout. I think Michael Trout's a better overall player, but he was in that class of being the best player in baseball.
I had the opportunity to see him in Milwaukee when he was with the Cardinals. It was probably, I'm going to guess it's 7-8 years or so ago, maybe even before then, when he was in his prime. And as long as I live, I will never forget Albert Pujols taking BP, because, you know, you watched everybody else up there, and there's, some oohs and some ahs. And then Pujols gets into the cage, and I think he hit the first one, like, 530 feet, something ridiculous. He's bouncing them off the scoreboard. And, you know, you just sat there in awe of the pure power and the majestic stroke. It was absolutely amazing. Like I said, he drilled three or four in a row, about as far as I've ever seen a baseball fly. And then he just sort of nonchalantly left the batter's box. The other thing I'll remember from that is watching Pujols standing on first base alongside Prince Fielder. And I don't think I've ever seen two bigger human beings trying to occupy the same space at the same time.
Oh, that's funny. I wish I'd have seen that scene. That's amazing. That's amazing. So here's my question with Albert Pujols. Over, under 7 home runs for his career?
That's a definite over for me. He's 600 today.
Yep.
I'm going to give him 15 more. That brings him to 615. He's got 4 years left on his contract. That means he's got to hit 85 homers over the next 4 years, which is an average of just a pinch over 20, 21, 22. I think it's a lock. I think he'll finish up somewhere around 715 to 730, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the poor guy can't run. I mean, so if his foot holds up, I think he's got a chance. But he could do a David Ortiz and just be as productive, you know, as he is today when he decides to retire. I mean, I think this is a guy that can get 700. I hope he gets that magical 715, and, you know, then it's, you know, just two guys in front of him. But I think he's going to be one of the greatest players ever to play the game, and I think he gets the 700. I'm with you.
Yeah, and, you know, anybody out there, any of our listeners that do get the opportunity to see Albert Pujols and haven't seen him, pay the ticket price and see him at least once, because you are witnessing one of the greatest players of any generation.
Yeah, do it now so you can go watch Mike Trout as soon as he comes back, see them both together. Timmy, we get back, we're going to do the waiver wire, and we're going to do it in 10 minutes. They are already posted out on Prospect 361. You simply go to the Fantasy tab, Tim's stage, go to Week 10, and they are sitting there as lively as you would love to see him. And the first guy is Ben Lively, traded. I can't remember when he was traded. I know he was traded from Cincinnati because he came out through the Reds organization. Really big pickup a couple of years ago in Dynasty Leagues. I was never a huge fan of Ben Lively. But there's a lot of ugliness happening in Philadelphia at the moment, Timmy.
Yeah, and I think I highlighted most of it in that first sentence. And, there's a lot of ugliness in that pitching staff. And I definitely would recommend taking a look at Lively. The big concern that I think a lot of people have is the no strikeouts in that first outing. But I don't see that as a concern moving forward. No, he's not a 10-11 K-9 sort of guy, but he did strike out 45 and 56 and a third at Lehigh. So the zero will be removed, I think, at some point.
Robert Gesellman comes in here, Timmy, 33% owned, and I had a lot of hopes for Robert Gesellman coming through the season. He's been terrible, but all of a sudden he's looked pretty good recently.
Yeah, did you like my first sentence on that one? It just came to me real quick, but I sort of like that sort of intro.
Okay, I honestly, you gave it to me like 5 of 8, so I literally barely read them. So the high hopes that many had for Gesellman entering the 2017 campaign faded quicker than our podcast intro. That's interesting. Our podcast intro lasts exactly 30 seconds, Timmy. So he lasted 30 seconds.
Yeah, that would be about it. And it was an ugly start. But, we've seen two solid starts back-to-back, combined total of only 3 earned runs. I'm thinking it's time to get back on the Gesellman bandwagon, Rich.
Robert Gesellman's got a great arm. He's struggled to command his pitches, which a lot of young players. I have the same thing about Joe Musgrove. Joe Musgrove is going to be a fine pitcher, and it takes these guys time. I mean, not everybody's Clayton Kershaw, and as you know, when Clayton Kershaw came up, he wasn't all that good either. I mean, he was wild, and you saw the stuff there. Not to say that Robert Gesellman's anywhere close in the same stratosphere as Clayton Kershaw, but I think he's going to be better than what he's shown. I think it's a good call out for you.
Well, thanks, Rich. All you have to do is remember the name Jose Berrios, right?
I have a lot to say about Jose Berrios. I think it's funny because when I was introduced to him years ago, it was Berrios. He was going to go by an English pronunciation. Now he's gone back to his heritage and his Berrios. All right, so Timmy, I'll call him Berrios if we can change that. I have a big opinion about Jose Berrios. Would you like to hear it?
Jose, go for it.
So, look, he's a fine pitcher, short guy, short pitcher, so put that up. But everybody has been telling me, lots of tweets out there, boy, look at that. Look at that pitch that he's throwing. It's like, the guy that pitches for San Francisco with the crazy slider that goes across and nobody can hit it and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's seen the movement on his off-speed pitch, correct?
Mm-hmm. It's filthy.
I disagree. I'm disagreeing with you and everybody else because this is what's happening, Timmy. It's his curveball. If it was his slider doing that, I'd be a little bit more interested. But it's coming in at about 80, 81 miles an hour, and it's going from right to left, right? So it's not curving in a traditional standpoint. You love to see your curveballs either be down or it's going from 12 to 6 or 1 to 5, something like that, that they've got more of a downward arc. And no one says, wow, look at how much that ball is going down, because you don't see the curve as much as you do when it's coming across the plate. The problem is that ball is going to be picked up. He's a righty. It's going to be picked up by lefties. As soon as they figure it out, as soon as they see him go through the league a couple of times, and the second time they're going to pick it up, and it's going to get hit hard because it's a slurve, Timmy. That is a classic slurve pitch, and it's rare that you see a guy highly successful with a slurvy pitch like that. It looks like it is unhittable because it looks like it's sliding out of everything. But if it was a tighter slider, which you wanted a higher velocity, so let's say it was throwing at 87 miles an hour and it had that quick little slide at the end, it would be a lot more effective because you think it's a fastball coming and then it slides. But the curveball, you're going to pick up the spin and you're going to know it's going to come straight across the plate. It's not dropping and changing the eye level. There's not a lot of eye level change. And I'm telling you, those lefties are going to kill it long term. That's my opinion, Timmy. I can back it up by a lot of scouts who believe the same thing I do, but everybody is infatuated by this. Oh my gosh, look at that. Look at that frisbee he's throwing up there. And it looks cool, but it's going to get hit.
Well, you know who throws exactly the same pitch? Okay. And I've watched it over the past month or so because I've had the time. Joe Smith, the relief pitcher for the Blue Jays. He throws exactly the same pitch. It's heading straight at a right-handed batter and then breaks almost 45 degrees back across the plate. It's a devastating pitch to right-handed hitters because they're bailing before they have a chance to even get set. But you're right. Left-handed hitters will tag it. Look at Joe Smith's history against left-handed bats. And I think that's I think it's a good comp. It's something I haven't really thought of, but until you brought it up. But yeah, I can see that.
That's what all those hours I spent in that stupid scouting school, Timmy. I finally learned something.
Well, I'm sure you learned a little bit more than that.
Pretty much it, Tim. That's it. I'm done. I'm dropping the mic, and this is my last podcast because I got nothing else, Tim.
Nothing left, eh?
Yeah, I'm done. I got nothing else.
You've heard all my puns, the best of my best jokes.
Exactly.
It's over.
That's like the best of my best scouting tips. I got nothing else. I cannot do any more than that. Let's keep going here. Taylor Motter, Timmy. It's an even day, so Taylor Motter is on the waiver wire thing. Yeah, he's terrible April, good May. Let's hope it's a good June.
Well, yeah, somebody's got to take John Segura's spot for the next month or so. So the at-bats will be there. Let's hope we see the better and not the worser.
Yeah, I did a quick calculation. It's about a month ago. I think Alan Servinus hit me up on it, asking if there was any publications that had the number of DL days. And I found a couple of different sites that had similar kind of things from last year to this year. And I did a quick calculation. There's been twice as many DL days this year than last year, Tim. It's just remarkable. I mean, whether it's Michael Trout, Madison Bumgarner, who never get hurt, to, I mean, Jean Segura, I mean, gone.
Well, yeah, and all you have to do is look at most of my teams, and they are witness to that fact. I'm just hoping at some point in time there's a little bit of equalization in the process because I've never had a year like I'm experiencing this year.
Yeah, and it's tough because most of our shows are based on, like, what we're doing and now, who to pick up, but we'd always talk about, well, so-and-so's hurt, who do we pick? And everybody's hurt. I mean, you're looking for anybody who can pitch.
Well, yeah, and if you grab the wrong guys, you're aware of it very quickly.
You also mentioned Hunter Pence coming back from the 10-day DL, and you got an interesting name out there, Sean Newcomb with the Braves, and another team that can't pitch at all. And again, that home park is turning out to be a real hitter's park. Sean Newcomb came up and the Angels organization, they traded him for Anderton Simmons, I believe, and really good stuff, and just has had a rough go of it last year, but seems to be putting things together this year.
Well, how long do the Braves continue to roll out R.A. Dickey and Bartolo Colon? At some point in time, that's going to, just like those guys, get old, and I think we see Newcomb sometime in the next month for his debut.
Billy Burns is back on the list. Says Jorge Soler, Timmy, got demoted. I'm not surprised because he wasn't playing very well. Did we just miss on Jorge Soler?
I think we just missed, meaning
the collective we. I mean, I think he's just not as good as we all thought. But Billy Burns obviously got speed. He could give you some good weeks, Timmy, but he is the guy that you pick up and win leagues with because he's the guy you'll go out and run out and pick up, and you'll play him for 4 weeks and get 8 stolen bases from him.
Well, yeah, and you look at the situation in Kansas City. If they move Kane, you know, as sad as it may be, Billy Burns might be a full-time player for half a year.
Agreed. The guy I really like, I've always liked, is Robbie Grossman, now with the Minnesota Twins, and you've got him at 7-for-24 with 2 home runs. Robbie Grossman was a really well-thought-of prospect coming up, always like a master of walks and still gets on base a ton. So on-base percentage leagues, a nice little player there, but is playing fairly well and getting full-time at-bats now for Minnesota.
Well, yeah, he's getting the at-bats. You know, I remember seeing him in Arizona a number of years ago when he was still with the Pirates. And, yeah, I liked what I saw then. And I'm happy that even after some moving around and some years that didn't exactly fulfill his potential, he's starting to show some of it. You know, 30 walks, 26 strikeouts, that's a good sign.
I saw Eric Solgan, I think that's how you pronounce his last name. I saw the stat line come up. I saw when he was pitching. And, Tim, I'm supposed to know minor league players. I've never seen him pitch. I don't even know who he is. I didn't know he was 6'7" until I read what you wrote. Who the heck is this guy?
He's a 6'7" southpaw the Royals are giving an opportunity to help fill the space, the vacuum created by Danny Duffy hitting the DL. Had a great start. Struggled today against the Tribe. It was a rain delay, so I think he only pitched 2 innings. But he's got the Padres next on the schedule, and any semblance of a decent start, and he could be calling the Royals' rotation home for a while. And hey, the Padres aren't a bad opportunity.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. He was a third-round pick. I guess I just missed it. He was the only drafted in 2014. He's only 24 years old. I just missed him, Timmy. He's never made my list, and Royals are fairly barren there. It's just a guy I missed on. I apologize to all my readers. Sorry, I just woofed on him.
Well, you know, they draft 1,000-plus every year, plus the Caribbean, Korea, and Japan. It's not shocking that every once in a while one will sneak by you, but they are few and far between, Rich.
Last guy is Matt Olson, Timmy. 14 home runs at AAA Nashville bode well for the chances for success. He's with Oakland. Outfield/first base came up as a first baseman. I always liked him. It's been a guy where he plays in tough parks. There's no power. He plays in more fair parks to hitter-friendly parks. There's a lot of power. So that's my only concern about him. But you got him up. Is he going to get a chance to come up with Oakland? It seems like everybody gets a chance to come up with Oakland.
Yeah, everybody gets a chance to play. I think if they give him a fair shake, I think there's potential there, and let's just hope he gets those playing time opportunities. For guys playing in an AL only, he's going to be a fairly hot topic in tonight's Fab Runs.
I agree with you, Timmy. And again, as I talked at the top of the show, we are in the window. It started probably late middle of last week, early part of last week, where it's starting to get safer for teams to promote their guys and avoid the Super 2 status. So these guys, Ahmed Rosario, they should be up in the next 2 weeks, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, is it wrong, Rich, for me to hope that Chad Kuhl has another terrible outing to increase the odds of me seeing Nick Kingham earlier? Is that wrong?
Tim, it's the Pittsburgh part. You know this. They got a big clock on their wall that says as soon as the clock strikes 12 on the day, then they're going to bring the guy. It doesn't matter if Nick Kingham's throwing a perfect game every time out and Chad Kuhl has got an 8 ERA, which I think he's close to that. It doesn't matter. That's what's so frustrating about that team.
Yeah, it Definitely it's frustrating, but I'm holding on to hope that that clock starts creeping closer to midnight sooner as compared to later.
Timmy, the final thing I'd like to share with you, and I wanted to thank your lovely wife, Kathy. I remember when I spilt pink lemonade on the floor?
Yes. Did it work?
It worked perfectly. There is no sign of a stain, at least that I can tell. So there's stains from beans peeing all over the place, but there's no sign of pink lemonade. So.
Well, hey, Kathy is the finest domestic engineer in the land, bar none, Rich, and I'm glad it worked for you.
It did work for me. Timmy, it's been a blast. So much fun. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Hope our listeners got a lot of good stuff out. Anything thing you want to promote this week?
Well, I'm just going to be hanging out on the Facebook page, jogging my memory, and I think I've got I'm going to join Brian Jura this week on a he's the proprietor of a Mets blog, so I think I'm going to be on this week talking some Mets baseball and looking forward to it. I'm starting to ramp up my schedule a little bit and doing some guest clips and looking forward to it. I'm feeling stronger and I can do it, so hopefully there'll be a few more down the road. Other than that I'm just going to be trying to move up. I'm in 12th and tote now. I'm on the verge of making moves.
Ring the bell, Tim. Ring the bell.
Oh, yeah. It's not quite Wall Street, but a close second.
There you go, Tim. It's been a blast. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you next weekend.
Be well, Rich.